morning, ladies and gentlemen. Time for our very last session this afternoon, and it is an absolute cracker. It's such a terrific privilege to be sharing this with you here in the Bega Civic Centre after that delicious and very homemade afternoon tea, wasn't it? Good to be in the bush where people know how to do afternoon tea properly. Our next guest is from the bush. Alistair Tremblay-Birchall is a stand-up and sketch comedian. It hasn't always been that way. He was at Bega High, and when he left, his focus was on something really naturally connected with being a stand-up comedian, engineering. But he currently writes for the TV series Mad as Hell and Talking About Your Generation, working alongside the likes of Sean McAuliffe. Now, I don't know about you, but Mad as Hell is about the only thing I bother watching with any regularity anymore. Isn't it awesome? Please welcome back to Bega, Alistair Tremblay-Birchall.
Thank you. Yes, I am Alistair George William Tremblay-Birchall, and it's great to be here. I have a friend who English is his second language, and so he has a couple of quirks in the way that he speaks. Like, for example, he uses the word seldom a lot, which I love, right? Because that's a word that I use very rarely, right? Now, I don't want to get too academic here, but that was what's known as a joke, right? Some people laughed, some people didn't laugh, some people are only just now finding out that it was a joke, right? But I'm talking about that because that's what I'm going to be talking about today, because that's what I do for a living, which is joke writing. I was going to be talking about the collapse of the ecosystem and the darkness in the heart of all man, but turns out that's already been covered. So I've had to change things at the last minute. I'm going to talk about how I started working for Mad as Hell. And so I think maybe I'm a little bit embarrassed about talking about myself, so I'm going to couch it in by saying that, like, I feel that anybody can probably do this, right? You know, it's like, I don't think it's a crazily difficult thing. It's just...
Great,
but you got a laugh there, so I don't know. You know, feels like you've got timing right. That's pretty much almost the whole shebang, right? So I thought, well, I'd let you guys know how that you can do this if you also wish to do so. So let's say you love comedy and you've got this urge inside you that you're not responding to go out and try to become a comedian. Well, the first step, the first step that I took was to suppress that urge. What are you doing? This is a terrible idea. What a terrible life choice. Go away. There's a voice in your head saying, I should do this. Don't listen to that voice, right? So what I did, my way to suppress this urge, is I went and did an engineering degree. As it's been, right? I thought, no, I'm a serious person. I'm going to go, yes, I love partial differential equations. Hey, excuse me, does this comply with the building code? Like that kind of thing, right? So I did an engineering degree. I went and worked as an engineer until at some point I started realizing I'm not like these people, right? There's something different about us. They seem to like this, right? They would talk about the, you know, the radius of copper pipe and their eyes would light up. You know, and I just didn't feel that passion. I realized, okay, I'm going to have to stop repressing this. I'm going to have to go and try and follow my dreams. All right. Right. But I thought, okay, I'll keep engineering for now, and I'll keep that as a backup. Right. And I kept doing it. And then I realized engineering was getting in the way. You can't do two things that require all your brain capacity. Right. And so then I realized that, all right, I'm going to have to give up one. And so I decided that, you know, even though I was keeping engineering as a safety net, it was very quickly becoming just a regular net, and I was trapped under it, right? Because with jobs like that, you get comfortable, and the older you are, the more difficult it is to get out, right? And in that way, jobs are a lot like beanbags, right? And so, And so I decided I had to drop that, right? So eventually I started, and then once you get to this point that you've admitted to yourself that, no, I can do nothing but this, you know, the thing that I'm passionate about, then you got to do like you would do with any art form or any, you know, any science or anything, that you go and you study the classics, your knock-knock jokes, your chickens crossing roads, Husey, right? All of them, right? And so you start doing that, and you start learning how to write a joke. What is a joke, right? And then you, and then the process for finding out whether or not you know how to write jokes is you write a page of what you think are jokes, and then you go and stand in front of a group of people, and then you say them, right? And so I will demonstrate that in front of you by doing some things that I've written down to show you how the process that even a person 10 years in can have what I imagine are a few stinkers. All right, let's see. They say the road to hell is paved with good intentions, but what's the road to heaven paved with? Also good intentions. Turns out good intentions is just a great material for paving roads with. All right, I don't know. All right, well, that one's a joke. I don't know. This one I don't think... I read New Scientist, but only for the particles. Is that a joke? Yeah? All right. Well, it worked. I'm really surprised. Do you think a spoon is just a webbed fork that's adapted for an aquatic environment? Yeah? All right. Some evolution fans. Okay, this one sounds bad at first, but I think it gets silly at the end. So... my favorite part of the Bible is the part that says, it is my belief that a man who should not lay with another man as he would with a snowman, for it is abominable. Yeah? All right. Call me poor, but why would you buy a bigger apartment when you can just walk slower around the one you got? No? Jeez. All right, I feel like this is a risky one. I like my sacks like I like my Nepalese farms. Yakety. No? All right. You see, now, that awful feeling that I get when something doesn't get a laugh, and that's the thing that makes a lot of people not want to go into comedy, right? But that's the thing that makes your write better, right? That's the motivation that you get for learning how to make a joke. All right, I'll just do a few more, and then I'll keep moving forward. My urinary tract is burning. Someone must be talking about it. No? I don't know if you heard this, but do you know that there's that old story about how when America, NASA was going up into space, right? They wanted to have a pen that could work in space. You may have heard this old story, right? They wanted to have a pen that worked in space, so they spent millions of dollars developing a pen that would work in zero gravity, right? But the Russians, on the other hand, they just used pencils, right? You may have heard that, right? Well, there was another scenario like this very recently where a lot of NASA astronauts were saying that they wanted to be able to eat sausages in space. Right? And so NASA spent millions of dollars developing this machine that could cook a sausage in space. But the Russians, on the other hand, they just ate pencils. So, all right. All right, so now you see that there's some of those that you keep and there's some that you don't, right? And this is the process of creating comedy, right? And that's why I feel that actually anybody can do it, right? Because this is what the grand illusion behind people doing stand-up comedy or comedy on TV is that it's just the process of evolution, right? You give a bunch of jokes life, you present them to people, and the ones that don't deserve to live, you kill them, right? And then you just keep all the stuff that works, right? And by the time you see somebody on television doing comedy, you see them doing perfect jokes that just work every time, right? Because they've worn it down to just a hardened nub of pure comedy. I mean, we've all seen loads of comedians that aren't funny, so maybe that's not entirely true, but that's the idea behind it, right? So that's the first step. Now, And then, so from that, you just start doing stand-up, right? And that's what I started doing. I started doing stand-up around different rooms around the place. You don't go and try out a bunch of gigs. You don't try out material like that when you're doing gigs in front of, like, you know, big, powerful producers who, you know, who have the ability to, you know, show you to millions of people. So you try to avoid those people when you're doing trying out new material, which is easy for me because they always seem to be not at my gigs, right? And so then I do stand up around the place. It can be a truly wonderful, it's probably the best feeling you can ever get is just having a great set. And the worst feeling you can ever get is not having that great set. And that happens way more, right? I've done gigs where I've performed to two people and one of them was yelling at me. Right, I've every year I do the comedy festival, I get at least a 1 or 2 star review where somebody does not trust me. Like they're like, he doesn't seem secure up there. I go, that's just what I look like. I just look insecure, and I am insecure, but that doesn't matter. Anyway, so then after I kept doing stand-up for a while, I was like, okay, what I want to do is I actually want to widen, you know, I want to widen what I'm capable of doing, right? Because it's an industry in which there's a lot of competition, and also, you know, stand-up is a very kind of narrow path. You want to get your fingers in some pies because you want to be able to get multiple income streams, if that's possible, right? Now, stand-up, I mean, when I talk about my stand-up income streams, I'm probably talking about $20 or a free beer most nights, if there's any payment at all. So then I started writing sketches with friends, right? We started writing sketches, and the idea was that we would film sketches and start putting them on YouTube, right? But in order to have a studio to be able to do this, we decided to rent an old warehouse, but we wouldn't be able to also afford house rent and this. I'd quit from engineering, and I was now working in a bottle shop 2 days a week, right? And so we decided to all move into the warehouse, which only had a little bit of asbestos in it, right? And we moved in there across the street from a meat processing plant, right? And we just started filming our sketches, right? And then not long after that, a friend who I'd met through stand-up offered me, he said, hey, do you want to come and write for the project? Who here is the project their favorite show? Everybody? Cool. All right. So I worked on that. By the way, that show has probably more writers than I've seen on any other television program. But where are the jokes? Anyway, it's just the magic of the project. That was the beginning of me being able to get some kind of work in there. And so we started doing sketches, we started doing this. And then you realize that in order to make it anywhere in this kind of industry, and probably in the arts, is that you really do have to keep diversifying and finding like little niches. And each little project is like a little, you know, a little lottery ticket. It's a little bit of bait that you're putting in the water with a hook that might, you know, get you either a job, or it might get you, you know, you might go viral and become very popular. Everything is so it's like, it's got to be a mixture of doing things that you love, but then also things that could bring opportunities for, you know, maybe great wealth, or at least enough wealth to survive, right? And so then I started doing different things. You start doing podcasts, I started doing a project called Alistair Lists Everything, right? There's a project called Alistair Lists where all I do is in front of a camera or in live audience is I continue in my project to eventually list all things. Bumblebees taking a tremendous mouthful of sugar, growing broccoli, the number 265, beaches, and so on and so forth. Now, I did a month of this at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival in Edinburgh, which is where they hold it now, to crowds that were obviously much smaller than this. I did for an hour every day, and I would say that probably 80 to 90% of people walked out. And I understand. it's the kind of dumb project that is like a joke in itself, but is not fun to watch. It's like, It's like you laugh at the knowing, if you laugh at all, you laugh knowing that it exists, and then you can see it for 2 seconds, you go, yeah, no, it exists, and then you can leave, right? You've milked all of the joy out of that you're going to get, right? But I did that, and turns out people, you know, because it's so unlikable, people who do like it are obsessed. They're crazy. I don't know if that's some weird law of the universe. If you have something that is unlikable and people like it, they're going to really like it. All right, so I do that. I do a comedy guided meditation called Shusher Guided Meditations that people have started telling me that they use to get to sleep. But it's really like, and I want you to think about the words pizza river. What do you see when I say pizza river? Do you see a river of slices of pizza flowing down? Or is the riverbed the crust and the water is the cheese? And so on and so forth. So I'm kind of I'm constantly just throwing rods into the water. And one day somebody who a friend of mine had been working with had looked at some of our sketches that we put online. And he said, hey, I'm the director of Mad as Hell. And I know right now that Sean is looking for writers. Would you like to write some audition scripts? And me and a friend kind of were like, yes, we would like to possibly work on the best show that's on television. Yeah, cool. And then he goes, great, all right, we'll write something up. And then for some reason, we just didn't do it straight away. We're just like thinking about it. And a week went by, and we, you know, if this hadn't happened, geez, my life would be, but he just kind of goes, he sends me an email a week later, he goes, feel like you're kind of wasting a good opportunity here. And I went, oh my God, you're right. And so I stayed up. It was the day Shorten had become leader of labor, right? And I just stayed up all night just writing scripts on that so that I could just the next morning send a very fresh, kind of very topical script over to John. And then John sent it to Sean. I know a lot of people with names that rhyme. And then Sean sent it back and he had edited it. And then he was like, this is how I would do it, like that. And then I was like, oh my God, I just collaborated with Sean McAuliffe. And then, and that would have been enough for me. But then a few months later, I got a call and, you know, or an email out of the blue that just said, hey, would you like to write on the show this year? I was like, that would be, yes, I would. That would be the best. Thank you very much. So it was, yeah. Yeah, it's very nice to happen. It feels so weird to come up here. It feels like I'm just coming up and going, anyway, look how great, feels weird coming up and just saying, look at the good things that have happened to me. But it's nice, what I was trying to say is that, like, I feel like I'm just the most normal guy who went to Biga High who didn't have any of these kind of prospects. And I just kind of made a decision to do something a little bit risky. And I'm kind of one of the lucky ones in which it sort of worked out. So it's a very nice thing. That's why I kind of believe that it is achievable for anybody. But, you know, you kind of have to want to. I don't think you can make somebody become a comedian if they don't want to. It'd be a bigger achievement. But I think right now, let's keep it to achievable goals. Becoming just a comedian when you want to. I've just got like a minute left. I could just try and see if I can do one more joke from here. I was in a small town recently with my friends for a Bucks party, and we were walking around town. So I'm not proud of this, but we were going to get a stripper that night, right? But as we're walking around town, we see on an electrical pole a poster for a guy who claimed to be a duck impersonator. Right? He said he was a duck impersonator, and the tagline was, if it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, then it's probably Don the Amazing Duck Impersonator. Right? And so we thought, wow, forget getting a stripper tonight. Let's get Don the goddamn duck impersonator. right? So first thing we did is we went back to our, we went to the supermarket, we bought some bread because we were going to throw bread at him. And then we went back to our hotel room and we ordered Don, and he showed up and he's like this little old man like this, and he goes like, "Where do I set up?" And we go, "Just over there." And then Don proceeded to put on the most beautiful performance of any type I've ever seen. Like, he became a duck. Like, he made ducks look like they're terrible at being ducks. Anyway, best lap dance I ever had. So, I appreciate you guys letting me come and tell my story. Sorry, I'm turning off my alarm. Thank you very much for having me. Sorry,
Yeah, I heard you with the release the Kraken. Thank you. Actually, this would be a really good destination to release the Kraken, yeah. Hey? I don't know if the Harbour Master is still in the building.
Ooh, yeah, I don't know, not with all the plastic in the ocean.
Right. Have we got any questions? Would anyone like to ask Alistair a question? We've got the roving mic. Put your hand up. You too may want to be a comedian. You've got an opportunity. No? Yes? Hands up. Oh, down here. Yes. Down the back.
You mentioned comedians who aren't funny. Why do we elect them to political office?
Oh, bomb, bomb.
I'll take that as a comment.
I don't think we particularly have an answer for that, do we?
No. I mean, look, it's. I think we're as a people not always the smartest. I don't know, but. Look, it was better when I just said, I'll take it as a comment. Any other questions?
Anyone else who would like to put their hand up? Grab the microphone. Yeah, down here, Corinne.
What's one of the funniest experiences you've had while you've been on the road at a comedy festival?
Oh, wow. On the road at comedy festival. Let's see. I got to be honest, though. When the daytime while you're waiting for a show is some of the most wasteful, dire, like, just bleak times where you're just kind of, like, you'd think that you use your time wisely. You're only working that 1 hour. You've spent all the hours you need to writing the show and things like that. And then you get to doing the show. You know, if you're doing, like, 20 nights in a row, you get to the show. And then on the day of the show, you just are just refreshing the ticket sales. And you're just sitting at home. You don't speak to anybody. Right, you sit at home all alone, and then suddenly, at like 9 p.m., you come out and speak to 50 people, and you're like, I'm feeling... Yeah, so look, that wasn't a great answer for what's the funniest thing. That's a good answer for what's a terrible... Look, you know what? I don't think anything funny ever happens to me. That's why all my jokes are based in these weird concepts. I'm talking about NASA and sausages and things like that. So, thank you. Thank you for your question.
Just hang on, one last question down the back there. You got
It's more of a comment, really. But
great.
I'm pretty sure that I had you in when you were in year 7 or 8 as a casual teacher. And you were a really active little boy. Did you have long hair then?
My brother?
Well, I might have been your brother.
My brother Campbell, Tremblay Burgess?
Oh, it was Campbell. Yeah. I did say to him, one day you're going to be on the stage, and I was going to say, well, there you are. No, but it was your brother.
Yeah. he's a very promising boy, that guy. God, one day I hope to be just like him.
Okay, we have just had a deeply local moment here. This has not happened in the rest of your comedy career.
Yeah, no.
Would you please thank Alistair
Tremblay Burgess? Thank you very much. Thanks so much.